Seat by the Window from Racine playwright Barbara Tilla is performed at 11:15 in Room 120. Join us or tune in. Support comes from the Kenosha law firm of Aaliyah, DeMay, Dunn, and McTernan.
This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by John Nicholson, a retired Racine Unified Administrator, Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the Teacher Education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconser, an Associate Professor of Education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current Special Education Support Volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, and Chuck Wolbers, a transition and work experience teacher in the Special Education Department at Tremper High School, also in Kenosha. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Good morning. My name is Mike Kehoe, and you're listening to Education Matters. I'm one of the rotating hosts here approximately once every month. Present with me are Ann Knapp. She's the president of the Kenosha Education Association. And Scott Farnsworth, recently retired Kenosha Unified teacher after an exceptionally effective and productive career. And also editor of the GLUE, and that's the newsletter and magazine-type format document that the KEA puts out regularly, and you do a number of other things over there, whatever needs to be done. Is that
trying,
right?
Trying to fill in, yes, for
right.
Everything that we lost.
Well, why don't we start since you've with you since you've recently been retired. How long have you been retired now?
Year and a half.
Okay, year and a half. How are things different now than they were just a couple of years ago?
In the schools? It's been last year when I was in the schools, teachers were experiencing, because of staff cuts, a great deal more stress. And this year, I've heard what I thought I would never hear, which was they said that this year has been even more difficult than the previous school year was. And that's largely because even though we've regained some of the staff that we lost from the first round of cuts under the governor's budget slashes, the number of new initiatives and new technology and new curriculum and change after change simply has the staff scrambling and feeling as though they are constantly working to catch up.
I'm glad you said that because that was something that I wanted to get out during the conversation that we're having here today, and that is that my impression over the last 2 years that I've been working basically as a full-time support person, kind of a volunteer over at Bullen, is that the stress level for staff is very high, and that includes the ESPs as well as the teachers.
Absolutely.
And that the school district is functioning basically because people are doing whatever they have to do to get things done, and they're basically holding the district up.
Right. I mean, we have staff constantly talking about the fact, I don't know how late you have to stay in, but we, you know, hear staff, from many staff, who talk about the number of hours that they have to put in, not even at home, but put in extra hours in the building. Some staff stay until 5, 6, 7 o'clock at night. I was talking to a staff member yesterday who was talking about one particular situation that had her at the school getting things together for a special program into the wee hours of the morning. So it's just that there is so much to do. And, you know, and the one thing you can't create is time.
Right. And in the field that I'm involved in, which is special education, there's another area of stress, and that is kind of a sadness and a stress level that comes because they care a lot about their students. Their students have special needs, and they can't fulfill them.
Right.
Yes, I would agree with that. I have actually have special ed students in my classroom, and I meet with the special ed students in the building often who are stretched thin because students are in multiple classrooms and they have to cover multiple grades. And these students are not, you know, have needs, extra needs, just at certain times when those special ed teachers can be in that room. They have needs all the time, and it is difficult to fulfill those or work with those students. So it places an extra load on the teachers who are already stressed and exhausted. And to Scott's point earlier, 2 years ago when I was full-time release, I was out in the buildings a lot, and we had many teachers who just would call us up crying, you know, ready to have a nervous breakdown because it was, you know, so stressful with such huge classes and the atmosphere of the district. And now, 2 years later, the workload and learning all these new programs is what is stressing them out. In the elementary, the class sizes have been reduced, luckily, happily, thankfully. But I know the secondary schools are still overcrowded. And I know that is an area the school board would like to address. It's going to be hard with the budget. I'm not going all over places. But they are trying to figure out all these programs, the new teacher evaluation system, the new reporting out program, and all this testing they have to do that they just go home just completely exhausted.
And I'm glad you mentioned the word sadness, because that's what I experience perhaps more than any other emotion. It isn't that teachers are complaining about the fact that they have to put in more hours necessarily. It's more about what they are losing in terms of time with students that really has them frustrated and saddened. That they are losing, because of all of these demands that, quite honestly, to teachers seem to be things that don't impact instruction directly. They interfere and cut into their ability to work with students and to develop those relationships with students that are so crucial to keeping students and children engaged in their education and making it something special. And that's what you hear, I think, is the main concern from teachers, that they just feel as though they're losing the opportunity to do those things that cause students to love learning.
There was a feeling that I think I sensed last year, a kind of a hopefulness that we've been through the rough times, we've hit bottom, maybe things are going to start to get better, and now with the new budget and the things that have been said about Common Core and vouchers and things like that during the course of the last election cycle and so on, that has disappeared, and there's almost some people are almost despairing. And it's not about economics, not about their personal economics. It's about what might be cut next year that is vital to what we're doing now.
Right. I think that people were hopeful that in the last two budgets, in the first budget, the governor had made those extreme cuts to public education, and then things stabilized in the second biennium. And now we're looking at this new budget coming forward, and the governor has once again proposed cuts to funding for public education. And you're right. I think people are once again looking at the fact that the district is facing over $3 million in potential lost revenue. And where are they going to get that money? And that doesn't even consider the proposed expansion of the vouchers and the fact that every student who leaves the district with a voucher is going to take just that much more money from the finances of the district, and it's a wild card. It's something that can't really be planned upon because you don't know how many applicants you're going to have for the vouchers in each district. The choice that they keep talking about offering to parents and students across the state, and I don't know how many Kenosha taxpayers are aware of the fact that we've been paying for the choice program for 25 years already. And I don't know, you said you had a figure of how much it was going to cost the district this year.
Right. Actually, DPI has it listed on their website that Kenosha Unified alone already loses $2 million to the voucher program.
Every year.
Every year. And it may go up with the next budget.
Right. You take off the limits, and nobody knows exactly what that impact will be financially.
Now, that sounds like it would provide us with a whole field of areas in which teachers, the Kenosha Education Association and KUSD, would have mutual interests, shared interests, and that there would be room for cooperation there. Do you see any? I know it's early in this process that has started, this sort of avalanche that's taking place in Madison. But are you seeing any signs that a more friendly and cooperative relationship may be there in the future?
I think yes. I think we have seen signs of that. I think that there is a growing realization that we are all on the same side in this issue, that we all care about public education, and that these financial cuts are going to negatively impact the ability of the district to provide services to this community's children. And so, yes, there have been overtures to rebuild the relationship between the school board and the community and the school board and administration and the KEA, school board and the staff. From the very beginning of this year with Dr. Servaglio Jarvis becoming the superintendent, one of the main areas upon which they want to give a focus is to the rebuilding of those channels of communication and a sense of trust that staff can come forward with their concerns and have a voice and be listened to. And that desire has been expressed by both the superintendent and the school board. And on our part, the KEA, we've been trying to deliver that message to our members and encourage them to take the superintendent and the school board at their word.
Yes, and I've gotten the same message from both school board and the superintendent. And actually, they actually follow through, which wasn't the case with previous administration, but if I go to either one of them with an issue, they listen respectfully. They want to hear. They want to know details because they want to get it fixed because they show that they have a genuine interest for making this the best school district in Wisconsin, along with all the members and educators that work there.
Right. And I think even beyond the district, we are starting to see people coming together over this issue who were not necessarily on the same side before. Smaller rural districts that have a strong Republican Party base in this state are facing even graver consequences from these proposed budget cuts than is a district the size of Kenosha. There's talk of the small rural districts not even being able to be viable any longer and having to either merge with other rural districts or cease to exist.
Yeah, I would think that in particular vouchers my experience with vouchers goes back to the Jim Crow period in the South, where vouchers have always been kind of a political thing. But the voucher programs, both the ones that was established back in Alabama back in early 60s and the one that was tried more recently, both of them have flopped because rural districts just weren't able to take advantage of them. I think back to my home area, which is Marinette-Menominee up in northern Wisconsin. If you live in Middle Inlet or Wabino or someplace like that, where are you going to take your voucher?
Exactly, exactly. And so that's an excellent point. I mean, the voucher initiative is really targeted at having an impact on the urban districts. And, you know, it has, well, politics aside, well, I don't know that you can put politics aside because everybody knows where the Democratic strongholds are in the state, and the Democratic strongholds are in the urban areas as well. So it almost seems to be an attack on those districts that have a Democrat party base. But the flip side of that is the concern that you bring up, and that is that when you start talking about bringing in private charter schools to take advantage of these voucher programs and give parents a choice, rural districts are not going to see those opportunities materialize. I think there was even this past year a closing of a private company that was running a charter school out in one of the rural areas of the state because of the fact that it just wasn't profitable. And that's the problem with private industry. They are there to profit, and therefore, and rural districts in all sorts of private industry areas have been suffering for years now with loss of services as companies have either cut back services or eliminated them because of the costs involved in providing them to rural areas.
I haven't done any detailed research on it, but it seems to me that with the exception of religious-based parochial schools, that the private voucher schools, the charter schools and so on, have not performed particularly well.
Well, yeah, I don't know what the new statistics are. I know that for years, one of the things that distinguished Wisconsin from a lot of states across the state was, or across the country, was that we were one of the few states where public school students, and as much as I disagree with standardized tests as an effective evaluation of learning, but since they were used by both public schools and some private schools, that public school students in Wisconsin actually outperformed private school students. And then some of the recent reports that DPI has put out on the voucher choice program in Milwaukee showed that the choice schools in Milwaukee were not doing a better job and actually doing a somewhat less satisfactory job in terms of educating students than the public school system that they were put in there to replace. So, yeah, I would say that that's absolutely correct. There has not been any substantive evidence anywhere in the country that I'm aware of that private schools outperform public schools, except for those few programs that institute very restrictive entry requirements. And that's not what this program was supposed to do. And I'm talking about those private schools that essentially weed out the low-income, academically challenged special needs students that supposedly choice was put in so that parents of those children could find a more effective educational program for them to take advantage of.
And as we're sitting here, we're talking, and we talked beforehand. I hope I'm not getting the two confused. There's a great to-do going on in Madison over the right to work law. If that passes, as it's likely to pass, does that do anything to affect the ability and responsibility of the KEA to represent teachers and to work with the school district?
No, we will still be here. We will still be standing strong. We will still be representing members, bringing forth professional development for them. We'll be bringing forth ideas to the district, bringing forth areas of concern that hopefully can be worked out so that there's not an area of concern anymore. But I do not foresee us having an issue because of the private sector unions becoming our right to work.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the right to work law is a law that particularly impacts on private sector unions. And it impacts on them in even to a greater degree than Act 10 impacted on the public sector workers in some ways. Because because right to work is a state law. And while the state can give employees the option of paying into the union or not for representation and benefits that are negotiated on their behalf, the unions are still obligated under federal law to provide all of the services and representation to workers in their representative unit. So literally what right to work does is it gives workers in the private sector the ability to receive all the benefits from their union and not have to pay any of the dues to maintain those benefits.
When the public thinks about situation of the KEA on one side and the KUSD on the other side, and thinks of it in an adversarial relationship, which isn't always, it doesn't have to be, they're generally thinking of your bargaining for wages and so on. But a big part of your representation has to be representing teachers in disputes that they may have with their building administrators, or I would think something that comes on that I've seen fairly often is where there's a complaint from a parent, and the teacher wants someone to be involved in that. Has there been any diminution of that? Is there going to be any difficulty with the KEA's ability under the present circumstances with your financial losses and so on to continue that?
No, I don't feel like that is going to be an issue at all because, it's, that's our position is to help represent people or help them work through an issue no matter what it is.
I actually, it's interesting that you brought up and used the word adversarial, because one of the things that we've been trying to talk to the school board and the community about for the past few years is the fact that I came into this district in 79, and from that point up until very recently, our relationship was rarely adversarial. The vast majority of the history over the past 30, 35 years in this district has been the KEA and the district working together to try to resolve issues that would impact negatively on student learning and the retention of highly qualified staff.
Well, one thing such as prep time, I mean, that becomes a big issue because you need time to prepare for your class, go over the work you had your students do, and you can't expect the teachers to do that all on their own time because they still have families, and you can't burn people out because when you're working with students, it takes a lot of energy, and it is an exhausting job. So you need to be able to have that time devoted to that area because that is part of your job, not just teaching. You have to be prepared to teach, to get up there in front of the students, have phenomenal lesson plans, keep them engaged, work on, you know, student behavior plans, or, you know, figure out what's going to work with the student because, you know, they might be going through something at home and they may need some extra attention. So you need to have time to sit down to get all that because it is, I think we were compared, teaching in a classroom was compared once to working in an emergency room. And even that doctor deals with one patient at a time, where we have a whole classroom full. So if that gives anyone any kind of idea of what it takes to be a teacher, that we all love. I mean, it is our passion. We care about students. We love to watch them learn. And so if we are the ones in the classroom and we find that this that there's, you know, something that we need or we need more of, or this is too much, we don't need this much, in order to be able to service our students in the best way possible, then we bring that issue, you know, to the district. And that's, you know, part of our working conditions and concerns, that, you know, something needs to be fixed because our working conditions are the students' learning conditions.
Right.
Has there been a significant reduction in the staff time that's available during the school day to work on things like grading and lesson plans and meetings and so on?
Yeah, if I can just follow up with what Ann was saying for a second, too, is it's important for people to understand that in order for a teacher to be able to appear to respond spontaneously to a student's unexpected interest in a particular area, the reason that can happen is because of an incredible amount of background preparation that the teacher has done in order to be able to meet and respond to all the different contingencies and, again, spontaneous interests that students bring to a particular lesson. So there are a lot of anticipated requests for materials beyond the curriculum that teachers think about and put into their planning for any particular lesson. I'm sorry, now I forgot your question.
That's all right. We're going along the same
senior
path.
Senior moment.
I'm the one who's entitled to the senior moment. I'm the one who's going to be 73 in a few months. I wanted to pick up on
loss of time.
So it's, yes, there has been a loss of time. Particularly, high school teachers lost half of their prep time a couple of years ago, and it's not the loss of time; it is the fact that teachers are now having to use so much of that time for things other than preparation, whether it be complications with new technology that doesn't work or meet their needs effectively or seems to just operate slowly. That chews up time. New initiatives in the schools that require additional meetings of staff. And, I mean, again, it's putting people between a rock and a hard place because they want to advance these programs, but it's a choice between either meeting and scheduling meetings during the school day, which has to erode into common planning time that teachers might have, or schedule those meetings after school, and then you're keeping staff longer and keeping them from doing planning that they'd be doing or grading at home or any of the other responsibilities that they have for a classroom. So, yes, there has been an erosion of time, and that's been part of the teacher's frustration.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think
I'm going to pipe in real quick.
Go ahead.
The day was extended by a half hour throughout, correct?
Yes.
And so that time is put in, but it was meant for tutoring or doing meetings. It was not meant for any more teacher time. But I agree, you know, coming from the elementary level, that I was very happy to see that the district did not, you know, with the handbook change, did not change our definitions of our prep time, where they are given to us from FIED music and art. So that has been kept in there, but there are a lot more things that we have to do to that spreads our time even more thin than it already was.
Like the professional learning committee, or community.
The PLCs
PLC meetings. Yes. Right. I mean, I was at one building where staff was volunteering to come in early before the work day started, 2 days a week, for their PLC meetings, because that was the alternative to not losing their prep time during the day. So, again, you are asking staff to put in more time somewhere, and much of it is being volunteered by staff.
I encounter very often an unsympathetic attitude from friends of mine in the general public, radio land, in regard to this point, because I don't think they realize the kinds of things you've been talking about, and something we were talking about earlier having to do with stress level, because we're sitting here in a radio studio. Now, in radio, a four-hour on-the-air shift is considered to be a long one, and generally during that shift you're playing music or you're cutting away for outside programming, whereas teachers are on their feet before a class all day long. And you need those periods to recycle.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, even lunch hours are being cut into, because the teachers are being asked to supervise lunch hours and to have students who may have been misbehaving during the day spend a lunch hour in a teacher's room. And so it just adds to the pressure cooker that exists in the school.
I find it funny when I call to make an appointment at a place and they'll ask me, well, can you just come on over at your lunch hour? And I'm like, but our lunch hour really is not an hour. It's 30 minutes, which includes dropping students off and being there when their lunch is done. So we have, you know, less than 30 minutes to do that. And I agree. I don't think the public is actually aware of, you know, all the conditions that we, you know, work under.
In the commercial business of radio, it's considered that after 4 hours, you pretty much exhausted your ability to entertain an audience and maintain a persona. And yet, there's no audience sitting in a radio studio with you. Whereas you may have 35 or 40 students
right.
in your classes that you're trying to entertain. In each of those classes is a little society, and you have actors, troublemakers, and kids who want to study, and kids who are going to ask you questions that are substantive, and kids who are going to ask you questions to test where your limits are on that particular day.
Absolutely. Yeah, it always used to frustrate me, because I'd always get, principals were always reminding us that we needed to be out in the hallways during passing time. I worked 30-plus years at Reuther Central High School, and it was always students with questions from the lesson, students who wanted to talk to you about some aspect of the class, and I kept trying to think, how am I going to get out to the hallway when I have students either staying after class or coming in before passing time is over to get the extra help or to get their questions answered? And I had to laugh with what you were saying, because Paul Kafer, who started Reuther, I remember going up to speak with him one day after school, and he said, how are you doing? And I said, I don't know, Paul, I'm just so tired. And he goes, of course you are. five shows a day. And so, yes, it does. It does. But it's great when it's going well and when you feel like you have the time. Well, I make the joke all the time that I was a medieval historian, and when I became a teacher, I finally understood why in the Middle Ages all the teachers were monks and nuns. Because it literally seems you could spend 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and still not feel as though you've done everything that you know you could do for the students in your classrooms.
Maybe this would be a good time for me to read this excerpt we were discussing earlier. This is from the Marquette Educator, February 25th edition, article about every teacher needs a backup career. And in talking about the stress level, it says this the author is a teacher named Nick McDaniels. Okay, and he says, quite frankly, in order to be a good teacher today, you have to be willing to get fired for your students. You have to be willing to stand up to corporate ed reformers who are trying to profit from off the play of children. You have to be willing to protest overtesting, stand up for student rights. You have to be willing to spend your time working for children instead of pushing papers. You have to be willing to speak up, to stand up, to fight for public education in communities that will never be helped by a privatized school system. And in order to do this, you have to be willing to take a lot of heat from school administrators sometimes and central office personnel and, let's say, people who in the public who don't understand. And you have to stand up to extreme levels of scrutiny and stress from your classes.
That's an excellent summation of exactly what teachers who are putting the education of their students first need to do and the pressures that they face pretty much on a daily basis. Fortunately, not all of those all at once. I mean, we have good administrators who are very supportive of their staff, and I wish there were more of those, and that there was enough for every school in the entire country. And that can be an amazing benefit for teachers. But yes, you're constantly being asked to take your students' needs into consideration and very often finding those to be in direct conflict with what you're being told are the requirements of your position. And that, again, that's what has a lot of teachers frustrated. They feel as though a lot of what they're being asked to do, as I said before, has nothing to do with actually delivering instruction to their students.
I would agree. And a big issue, I know nationwide, is the over-testing of students, which I get the testing to monitor progress, and then you know where to go back and reteach, or you know which students are where, and you can base your lessons off of that. But on average, a student in the United States takes 17 tests a year, and the money industry that is being put into this is just insane. Annually, $9 billion is spent on the NFL, $11 billion on the movie industry, and the testing industry of the students in the United States is $60 billion, which seems to be way, way, way over the top and unnecessary to be able to determine what we need to know, where the students are, and where we need to go with them. Plus all the days it takes away from teaching, like you had just said, Mike.
One of the, as we're beginning to wind down, one of the things I wanted to get at was something that we've heard very often in the last couple of years, and that is that technology will help us alleviate the problems created by class sizes. Teachers will be able to effectively teach large classes if they have electronic blackboards and playback devices and things like that. What's your feeling on that? in our electronic environment here.
To an extent, it can help out, I would say. It's technology is also unreliable, where a teacher's, you know, there's going to be a body there. She's going to be teaching at her hardest. But technology is if, like, you are doing, like, if someone's at home and they're doing, like, distance learning and watching the lesson, technology may fail, and then they'll, you know, lose that lesson. So that is a huge thing. Some districts, if we're not talking about just Kenosha Unified, do not have the, especially the rural districts, have the technology, you know, the capabilities of having all that extra technology in there.
And when it, and that is the problem, as you become more reliant on technology, the problem arises when it ceases to work. And we've experienced that. I mean, we used to experience that periodically over at Reuther, where we had the Accelerated Independent Study Program, which was all computer-based instruction. And when the server went down, or it seemed as if every morning when California booted up, all of a sudden our students would be booted off of the system. And those types of problems really throw, in a, not only create frustration, but throw a wrench into the whole flow of the day. What I'm hearing from teachers as a primary concern is they wouldn't mind the technology if they had technology that actually helped them do their job. What they are experiencing is technology that makes their job harder because it's slow, and it, as a special ed teacher put it to me, I literally have to spend more time putting in the information into the computer system than I get to spend with the student.
When I think back on my career as a student, there are many teachers who have had a major impact on me. I can't think of any item of technology that has had a particular effect on me that I remember. And there's another thing that occurs to me that I'll try and sandwich in here and then give you both an opportunity to close your comments. I deal with a lot of students who are economically disadvantaged. Many of our programs in our schools these days are based upon the internet and assignments that students are supposed to do at home that maybe they can get extra credit, maybe it's something that's required, a research project or something. They don't even have computers at home.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And it's creating, increasing a gap between minorities and between affluent families.
And even if the school provides a computer, then you have the problem of internet access from the home, which
right.
many of these families do not have. Right. And it's a, you're right, it is a very definitely an inequity that creates problems.
Okay. Any last thoughts, Ann, in our last minute here?
Well, I'd like to thank you for having us on the show to get our word out. And, you know, just despite the challenges, the educators of Kenosha Unified District are very caring and committed to the success of all the students. And they love what they do. They want to do it. It's just there are many challenges that they face daily that they go through.
Right. And I think that they're hurting because they feel as though they're losing that personal connection with their students that allows them to bring so much more to those students' education and instruction.
Okay, well, that will have to end it for us. I don't know who the host is next week, but there will be another Education Matters at 10:30 on Saturday here on WGTD and our translator stations out in Walworth County. And I hope you have enjoyed our program and found it useful, and that you'll tune in next week. Thank you.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org.
Good morning. I'm your host, Steve Brown, welcoming you to this live broadcast of the 8-time award-winning WGTD Radio Theater in this, our 11th season and show number 92. And today we are once again featuring the stars from the 91.1.